Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight Podcast 199, ever closer to that magical 200, guys. This is a recording on a Monday, the 16th of January, 2012. I'm Steve Litchfield. With me up in Hull, I have...
David Gilson. Hello, everybody.
Just trying to catch you out by mentioning you first. And up in Edinburgh.
Man who could build a shed.
Yes, and who has a million sound effects, all of which we hope are not going to make it onto this podcast. And also down in Sussex.
Hello, everybody. It's good to be here. Looking forward to talk about the latest goings on in the Symbian world.
Yeah. Obviously, throughout 2012, I think it's fair to say, Rafe, there will be slightly less happening in the Symbian world. Of the first couple of months, we've got the anticipation of Bell, and we've got various small updates and things to do with Anna and Bell and compatibility, which will keep us on our toes. I think it's fair to say that towards the second half of the year, we're going to be slowing down just a tiny bit and perhaps maybe even making the podcast fortnightly.
Yes, I think that's a possibility. I mean, we've been talking about this amongst ourselves and had a few inquiries from the listeners as well. And while we think there's something to talk about on a weekly basis, we'll keep it as a weekly podcast. But we don't want to get to the situation where we're stretching things out. I mean, that said, there's actually quite a lot of room for just having a slightly more laid-back discussion. And we'll bring in other topics from the mobile industry. And, of course, maybe talk about platforms that you might think about switching to if you want to keep a high-end device, because although we're expecting there might be one or two more relatively high-end Symbian devices, there's no getting away from the fact that Nokia have switched to Windows Phone as their primary smartphone platform, whichever way you want to couch it, which means there's not going to be so many new Symbian devices coming out. We'll have plenty to talk about, I think, in the mid-tier, and I think we'll have something to talk about pretty shortly, actually. And we've still got quite a few devices yet to come in that we're going to talk about. And of course, there's the existing ones, and we'll talk about software reviews. But yes, there is a sense of inevitability about that. And I'm sure everyone's crying quietly in the corner about it. But I think we probably have to face a bit of reality as well.
We should also just emphasise over and over again that the fact that there may not be any new Symbian handsets beyond, say, mid-2012 does not mean to say that all the handsets you already got, all the N8s and E7s and whatever else you've got pimped to the max, they're going to carry on working quite happily for years to come. And the site itself will still be here providing you with features, reviews of new software, won't it, Rafe?
That's absolutely right. I mean, we almost spend more time talking about, you know, the stuff you can do with your current devices anyway, and the kind of spotlight points of the year do tend to be on new devices. But we've always said our audience is mainly people who've already got the Symbian devices, and they're still selling, you know, significant numbers. Last quarter it was around 20 million, depending whether you look at the Gartner figures, which are, you know, actual sales to retail or sales into channel, in which case it's sort of 17 million or so, because retailers are starting to destock Symbian devices. That's to be expected, really. Be interesting to see what happens in the sort of the first half of 2012, because I think the Bell devices have quite a bit of potential, potentially out in the Asian markets. We're going to have some site features on that shortly. And it is very noticeable, I think, just talking in traffic terms, you know, we have seen a fall off in our Western European visitors, but we still very much love all of you if you are in Western Europe, but we love even more our Asian visitors, who are actually making up a bigger proportion of the site and are visiting in more numbers than ever before. And it's people in India, China, the Philippines and Malaysia and all of those countries out in Southeast Asia who I think, you know, Symbian will continue to play quite an important part of the device portfolios in that part of the world for some time to come. And that's why Nokia talk about the sort of 2015, 2016 dates. And certainly there are going to be new devices in 2012 specifically serving those markets. And we know there's at least one software update on the way, and Nokia have effectively said there's two, you know, software updates, so we'll have C something and D something in due course. So although, you know, there may be a wind down in one sense, I actually think we're not going to have too much trouble finding stuff to talk about, especially as there's still a lot of good applications coming out, and some which we're going to get onto this week, I think.
Now, there has been a few items of new software. Nokia Social has been updated. No, don't run off your seats. It's not for Symbian, Anna, unfortunately. Things like the N87 don't get new Nokia Social yet. This is a new version specifically for Nokia Bell, stroke Symbian Bell, because it has Bell-compatible widgets. Now, Rafe, you've been playing with this. It's got updated Facebook functionality, dedicated home screen widgets for both Facebook and Twitter. How much of an update do you think it really is?
Well, I think this is probably the biggest update that Nokia Social has had since it was first delivered. There's an update to the look and feel of the application. I'll describe it as Bell-like rather than actually completely Bellified, if you like, simply because it's still based on web runtime. It's actually a hybrid application. There's bits of native code, bits of Qt code, but the main functionality is sort of web runtime based, and that is reflected somewhat in the performance, and you can tell, if you know what you're looking for, that there are bits which aren't actually exactly as the Bell style guide should be. But it does introduce the kind of the toolbars at the bottom, the image-based ones we've come to expect with three or four images, and then the similar in the menus, and you know, the sort of general feel of the application. You can see that it's transformed, and it does look much more attractive for that. In terms of the widgets you mentioned, those are the bits that kind of make it Bell only. In theory, at least, you can install this on Anna and it will work, but the widgets won't, and it's not officially supported. So, you know, just be careful with that kind of thing. The usual advice there, you know, it's probably best to wait for the official support, and that'll be available in the Nokia store as usual. And it's not too long to wait for the Bell updates anyway. The widgets are actually, I think, a really nice functional addition. What they do effectively is add four shortcuts to your home screens for each of those, for Twitter and Facebook, and it's quick access to kind of the key functionality of those social networks. So for example, the Twitter one, it's tap one button to get into writing a status update or a tweet, similarly to get into your inbox, do a search, etc., or get to your timeline. For Facebook, it's really around the news feed, around your inbox, around events, and around notifications. And talking about notifications, that's actually one of the major additions in terms of Facebook functionalities. So support for notifications, however, it's fairly limited in its utility at the moment, because notifications should really lead to whatever they're notifying you about, and at the moment the application doesn't really do that. So
the little things with the red flags, Rafe, on the Facebook widget on Bell devices, if you tap on the one with the, for example, the calendar icon with the little four on your screenshot on the article, what does that take you to?
That's taking you to the events, that calendar. The globe is taking you to notifications, and the sort of the message bubbles are taking you to your inbox. So as I say, it's kind of shortcuts to the key functionality. The difference there from the previous versions is that you'll get, especially if the application is running in the background, which I think most people using this will have it like that, means you can get to those functionalities in less than a second, which means pretty rapid access to the key social networking functionality. And if you compare that to the earlier version where things were really quite slow, and especially switching between views could be slow, That's a big improvement in my book.
I was very interested to see the linking. There's improvements here with linking of Facebook friends to entries and contacts. Now, how did this work? Because in the previous version of social, you'd have to go into the social, find a friend, for example, on Facebook, and then tap an icon, then pick the appropriate entry out of contacts, and then that will be linked manually for one contact, and it would take an eternity. How exactly does it work now? At which point does it leap into action?
Well, you can still carry out that manual process, but from what I can see, and it's actually not very obvious because it does this completely silently, when you first load up the new version, it will look at your contacts and then look at your Facebook friend list and see if there's any commonalities between them. And I imagine it's basing it on a bit of data like email or perhaps phone number. And if it finds links between those two, it will automatically link them for you. So I found that about 20% of my contacts were linked in that way. That probably reflects the fact that there is a sort of difference between my contact list and my Facebook friends list. And obviously for some people, there'll be a greater proportion. And it obviously does depend about on the completeness of the data, both in Facebook and contacts. So, you know, a lot of people might have a different Facebook email address or something like that. But nonetheless, you know, it works well and it saves you that manual process. And of course, I found, looking at my contact list, it was probably the ones I was most likely to link that actually did automatically link. So, you know, close friends and family, where you tend to have a bit more information about them in your address book. So that's a nice addition. Just one word of warning, if you do that, it will actually overwrite any thumbnails you already have in place, which can be a bit annoying if you've gone through your address book making a big effort to kind of have nice looking high resolution pictures. The good thing is, though, that Nokia Social is now using high resolution thumbnails for those contact images. Previously, you might remember, they were quite blurred when you linked a contact, but they're now using a high resolution version of the sort of avatar or the image that you have with the Facebook friend. So that looks better, and obviously that has an impact when you're looking at it in the contacts application or when there's an incoming call.
In fairness, every other Facebook album sync utility, they also overwrite your thumbnails and contacts. This isn't just Nokia Social app. That's the way Facebook sync can do. When you set up with a Facebook application, you expect a certain amount of information to make its way into your contacts with your permission.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've yet to come across one that gives you completely full control. And, you know, Nokia get points for doing a decent implementation here. It's not quite as effective as something like the Windows Phone People Hub, which seems to do a better job of merging contacts. But, you know, all credit to them. It actually means that you will have a certain number of your contacts linked. And really the main benefit of that is when you're in the contacts application, you can see the latest status updates and then jump into the profile page for that person much more easily than you could before. So yes, it's a nice bit of functional addition. I guess the other thing just to talk about very briefly is the Twitter module. There are less updates here. It probably benefits more in some ways from the new look UI and feel, because it's almost a simpler application, if you will, whereas Facebook, you know, you've still got the various modules sort of connecting together. And I've yet to come across a Facebook mobile implementation that does that really well, probably reflecting its desktop origins. But things like split screen text input, for example, work very well when you're doing a tweet. There's basic support for trending topics in search. You'll see the worldwide trending topics. I think the thing that people will probably welcome most, though, is the performance improvement. Notably, scrolling is smoother and faster than it has been before. And as I mentioned previously, when you switch between views or between the different Facebook and Twitter modules, things happen more quickly. And so just overall, assuming you're leaving it running as a background task and then using Symbian's multitasking or using the home screen widgets, you can get into the application and start getting information out of your social network much faster than before. So overall, a good update. The caveat is, if you're a power user, you're going to be looking at the third-party Facebook clients or the Twitter clients. I think if you're looking at Facebook clients, we're kind of recommending Fascinate as being probably one of the pick of the bunch at the moment. FMobi is another option that's also very good. And Twitter, of course, the mainstay there is Gravity. So that's for power users. But for, you know, for the basics, Nokia Social is doing everything reasonably well. And, you know, remember, this is out-of-the-box functionality. You know, this version of Nokia Social will be shipping with all the phones by default in due course. I mean, David, I think you've been looking at another third-party Twitter application, haven't you? What was your take on that, and which one was it?
It was called Tweeties, and I thought this is very interesting from a user interface design guide point of view. I would say the unique selling point of Tweeties is that it really closely mimics the style of the official Twitter application that you'll find on Android and iOS. And I think that has benefits and disadvantages. The benefits is that, say, if you're planning to leave Symbian and go onto an iPhone or an Android device, this will prime you for using the official Twitter application. And vice versa, if you, for some reason, if you happen to be coming from Android or iOS to Symbian, it'll be much more familiar to you than, say, Nokia Social or Gravity. And by the way, it costs £3 in the Nokia store, which is, it is cheaper than Gravity. But on the other hand, as more and more handsets are going to get Nokia Bell, there's a much more cohesion because of his style guide. And Tweeties tends to, well, necessarily so, breaks that. But I thought it was a good application, but, and it covers most of the bases in terms of features, even supports image uploads. And I've got a review on that coming up later this week.
And both applications, Nokia Social for Symbian Bell and indeed Tweeties, are both completely unusable in my book, because both are completely AMOLED unfriendly. Both of them have white backgrounds for everything, which means that your battery will drain 15 times faster than it should do. And that's a rant I shall keep coming back to until Nokia listen to me and third-party developers listen to me. There are plenty of Twitter clients, for example, on Android and even some for Symbian, which use nice black backgrounds, and they look absolutely gorgeous on AMOLED screens. So the developers have got no excuse whatsoever. Make it a setting, dark theme, light theme, done. Move on. Am I off base, Rafe, very quickly?
I think there's probably other things to worry about. I mean, I do agree with you. In an ideal world, you have both dark and light themes. I think the nature of the social networks is you're not spending vast amounts of application time in them, and there are other applications that are just as bad in this respect. But I guess in an ideal world, yes, implement a light and a dark theme in your application if you can. The reason this doesn't happen, at least it doesn't really apply in this case, is because for branding reasons, a lot of companies will choose to have their brand on a light background because that's what it's been designed for. But yes, I think there's probably less excuse in the case of Nokia Social and Tweeties and other such applications. And I will admit, if there is a dark option, I'll switch to it, and certainly that's what I have in Gravity, for example.
Yeah, you did mention that ideally not much time will be spent on social networking applications. I think for many of us, much of our day is spent in social networking, right? Maybe that's just me being wasting all my time rather when I should be writing for All About Symbian and All About Windows Phone. It is a major story. I'm sure we've all got comments on this. This is Sysvel, which is I hadn't actually heard about this company before this news story, but it's a specialist company in managing intellectual property, and Nokia has sold it, as far as I can make out, 450 patents, or patents, depending on your pronunciation, covering 2G, 3G, and 4G technologies, and also some video encoding optimization technologies. So basically, as I understand it, Rafe, Nokia sells Sysvel, 450 patents, say we're pre-licensed, they say, so you can't then charge us money for using our own what used to be our own patents, but you can now license to other people and we'll then take a share of the profits in the future. Is that about right?
Yes, that's right, Steve. There is a tendency when you see these kind of news stories to have a knee-jerk reaction. It must be evil because we're selling patents or something bad is happening. I think you could probably look on this as a case, you know, there's no way to be absolutely sure until we see what happens down the road, that Nokia is saying, we got these patents, they have a value to them, we want to make them readily licensable by other companies, but that's not necessarily in their core expertise. And, you know, this is something they've done quite a lot in recent years. They've sold off bits of Nokia IP and processors spring to mind as one example, but also the way that the commercial rights for Qt were sold off as well to Digia. Is to get other companies to do it for them. They'll then take, obviously, a share in the profits in this case, and they're all pre-licensed. And as I say, although there is a knee-jerk tendency to go, this must be wrong, not necessarily, because really it all depends on how Sysvel behaves, and I suspect Nokia has pretty strong agreement with them in this respect. And the key phrase here is FRAND, which is fair, reasonable and non-discriminatory, which basically means the patent should be available for those who want to license it on a reasonable basis, because I don't think anyone doubts that the idea that you should be able to make money based off research and development you've done or innovation is a fair one. It's just a question of, can you do that in a way that doesn't stifle either innovation or competition, and there is a delicate balancing act to there. I think this one caught people's attention more than some of the others, and it's not the first time Nokia or indeed any tech company has done this. It's actually something that goes on all the time, but it was interesting to note that quite a lot of these patents cover kind of the essential parts, as Steve described, that's GSM, UTMS and also LTE, and those are things that basically other manufacturers are going to be obliged to license because they are very important to the future of mobile, particularly things like 3G and LTE. That means that, you know, if you're trying to create a phone, you're probably going to have to talk to Sysvel in order to do so. I would imagine most of the existing mobile manufacturers already have these because they'll have existing licenses with Nokia, and it's noted when this news came out that any existing licensing provisions are respected and will continue. So as I say, I think this is more a case of Nokia looking to maximise its investment. It may get some short-term cash injection. I don't suppose that's really the motivating factor here. I suspect it's more a case of, rather than dealing with the licensing issues themselves, they can export it to a company who has expertise in doing that, and that will free up Nokia to concentrate on other things, creating phones, innovating, doing its own research and development, rather than spending time and effort managing a patent portfolio, which in one sense isn't within their core competence or core activities.
Yeah, I think that's the main point there, Rafe. I mean, if you have a kitchen, you don't put in a rank amateur to create your meals. You get yourself a big chef. If you don't have a big kitchen in a factory, what you do is you have a little van outside that does burgers and everything, and they all do it very well. I do see it as exactly the same way. You know, Nokia, as we all know, is in a very tricky business position. They have to maintain a bit of transition, they have to maintain a bit of consistency, they have to maintain messages, and I think dealing with especially the France side of patents, which just has to be done, is distracting. You know, there has to be departments in there and that deal with it, and those departments would have to report up the management chain, and then the management chain would have to report further up into the boardroom and everything. And it's, you know, right now Nokia don't have a lot of time They have to get things right this year. And if the choice is, let's have a little bit of money up front, we'll lose a little less in the backside, but we'll be able to focus on the Bell transition, we'll be able to focus on the high end at Windows Phone, we'll be able to focus on the push into India with the handsets that we saw coming out of Nokia world down at the 65 to 100 euro mark, and we can get rid of this issue and still kind of have a bit of control because we said the contract of we still get to use that stuff, then this is a really, really smart move. There's also one extra thing. If Sisseville do get into a great big patent fight with Apple or HTC or Android or anything, Nokia's name's not really going to be associated with that. It's going to be Sisseville. Yeah, sure, the geeks online will know that it's Nokia, but everybody else will go, oh, random patent company. That just happens. And that will, you know, kind of act as a buffer for Nokia as well.
And of course, Sisseville will be paying the lawyers, not Nokia. So I think, I think the legal bills of Nokia will go down with this deal, if nothing else. But, let's finish off this podcast, guys, with just 1 year on. We've now just over a year when all of the Symbian 3 smartphones have been available. I think the E7 came out sort of January last year. We've also got now the E6 and X7 in the lineup, plus the 701 and 700 running Bells. That's something like 8 or 9 handsets. Now, of all that range, which of these are actually still in use, potentially on your desk, in your pockets, and which of them are firmly stuffed in a drawer, never to see the light of day again? I'm going to go around the panel. I have my own ideas. Let's start with you, David. I know you've tried just about all of them. If you'd like to pick two that you just absolutely had to have in your pockets and perhaps one that was going to be in a drawer, which would you go for?
Well, the one that would have to be at my side at all times is the N8. I love the hardware design, and of course that camera, it's just great for catching great high quality in situ shots and document scanning, which I've kind of said many times is something I do. I think for just generally having a nice phone to have in hand and just something nice to fondle while you're playing games, even the C7 is a close second because it's just a very nice shapely design. So I think they're possibly my top two Symbian 3 devices, but I think if I just had to pick one, it would have to be the N8 above all else.
Yeah. Ewan, what about you?
I love the phrasing of this question. Which two handsets would you have and which one would you put in the drawer? Implying that we all have three handsets that we're using in rotation. Yet again, three geeks and a Scotsman. It's the C601 for me. I never really got comfortable with the N8 is the fair answer. You know, having a phone whose entire purpose is to take better pictures, well, you know, I'm starting from a pretty low level on that one. So the N8 just gave me more things to get wrong. The E7 was a great handset, and it sits here, but it's interesting that since I've switched over to the Windows Phone, so I'm on All About Windows Phone, and really with the Nokia 800, the E7 is just too big to carry around now alongside the 800, and they kind of do the same things. So it essentially got pushed aside, and taking up its place is the C601. I loved this when it came. We got a hold of it at the end of December last year. As the small, cute, tiny screened device, and it went up and it went all the way through South by Southwest with me, and it kind of just sat there as the E7 was there, just sitting there quietly, just going, I'm still here, you know, like a small white Volkswagen Beetle with the number 53 painted on the front, and when the time was needed to keep it a phone that I knew would work, that would be there when I picked it up, that had an incredibly long battery life, slim, fashionable, still looks absolutely gorgeous, it was the C601. It's back in use with the regular SIM as opposed to the reviewer's SIM. And yes, that does mean I do carry two handsets, as Steve implied, but only one of them is Symbian there.
Rafe, what about yourself? Two you'd like to make essential and one you'd like to ditch?
Well, I'm carrying around the Nokia 701 as kind of my main Symbian device at the moment. Sort of, I'm like you, and I've got a phone in each pocket, a Windows Phone one and a Symbian one. And I've commented before on the battery issues. And I still like the design of the 701, or really harks back to the C7, which I think everyone knows was my favourite Symbian 3 handset. It's just the sort of the compactness, the feel in the hand. And, you know, it always felt a little bit faster to me. And now with the 701, I'm enjoying Bell and the NFC functionality. And so that for me is probably the one device. like everyone else, the N8 really has a special place in my heart, entirely because of the camera. But I was just looking across my desk, and the other device that's actually still sitting on the desk, which means it sort of has regular outings, is the E6, and that's really the QWERTY keyboard. And again, I think people know I've long been a fan of that form factor, mainly because of the messaging that it brings. And I will say it's not really until the introduction of the sort of portrait QWERTY on Symbian that I entirely got comfortable with doing long email messages or messaging in general, I suppose, on a touchscreen device. I will confess I have got more used to that now, and that's really thanks to both the sort of 701 and the Lumia 800 as well. But I still like going back to that sort of QWERTY form factor, and there's something very comforting about it because of the sense of familiarity. So, you know, the E6 also is one of those devices that kind of sticks in my mind. So I guess it'll be the E6 and the 701 or the original C7 that I'd grab if I had to choose a device when I was leaving for a desert island or something like that.
I'll just come back on mine, because I have to admit I was kind of struggling a little bit when you first phrased this question about which was left in a drawer, and I part of me kind of didn't want to say any of them because it just felt too mean, but but I think what's just hit me, and it's actually taken me quite by surprise, is that of the phones that I have through that stay a long time and that stay for not as long a time, the ones that have ended up being left untouched have been the E-series phones, the E6 and the E7. I've just not had as much use for them. And that has really amazed me, because I came into Symbian with being an E-series fan. I was all about E-series, man. And and I think I've kind of like subtly transitioned over to using touchscreen phones, and that's that.
Yeah. Did we ever have allaboutEseries.com, Rafe?
I can't remember. I think we may have done, but I think that's kind of an interesting facet that, you know, if you'd asked me 5 or 6 years ago about touchscreens, I'd have probably been a bit, well, I don't know about those. They seemed a bit new and faddish to me, and I'm grumpy old man side, I guess. But as with David, I found the same thing. I have got a lot more comfortable with them. I still actually think the E6 combination, where it's hybrid, where you have both touch and QWERTY, is actually the absolute ideal. The problem really is that the screen size then gets quite small, because I think there's kind of the one-handed use on touchscreen still is less than optimal, and there is definitely a feel. I think Marco Antisari, Nokia's design lead, is going to describe it as look down, and I think touchscreen devices are far more like that, and that's true of any touchscreen device, almost regardless of the UI. The UI can fix a certain amount of that, but the phones with physical buttons, it just felt like they're didn't have quite so much of that, perhaps because, you know, you could actually feel with your fingers where a key was and then press it. So I do wonder whether there's potential for clever touchscreen, you know, actuation motors or some other form of tactile feedback to come in and sort of sort that problem out. It's both hardware and UI, I accept. But it does amaze me. I think the thing that Symbian 3, more than anything else, has brought home to me is just how fully touchscreen devices have arrived. If I look back and think about what my thought processes were a couple of years ago, and I'm quite happy to admit I've completely changed my mind, and yes, touchscreens are the way to go, but maybe I was too much of a stuck in the mud about it. I know plenty of other people that saw that before me. I will say that there is still plenty of room for non-touchscreen devices, and I think the sort of touch and type devices that you see in Nokia's Series 40 range have a lot of potential. And for the more basic phones, I'm still not convinced touch is absolutely essential. But for the smartphone, it does seem that touch, even if you're then coupling it with some physical keys, is absolutely essential.
It always surprises me when I look back at something like the 7650 with tiny specs, tiny screens compared to what we have nowadays. But when you look at the SDK and you look at the underlying code, the only thing that was missing to turn the 7650 into a touchscreen was the touchscreen. All the code and all the hooks, admittedly at point it was for a point interface, not a tap and slide interface, but all the code was originally there in Symbian. And you could have had a touch layer on the 7650 and it would have all worked and it would have all been there. And you know, Symbian kind of lost its way. It didn't go down that route. The 9210 had the same code as well, as did the 9500 as it started to bleed in. And it's really interesting to see that the whole time there's been this little bit in the history of Symbian that says, you know, we can do touch. And it never really got the momentum that it needed, which, of course, led to some interesting decisions 2-3 years ago and put us and the whole smartphone market onto the route that there is. But it's not something that suddenly appeared. It's just it needed, you know, coders put it in, but they weren't fashionable enough to push it up the chain. And I wonder what would happen if the 7650, you know, 11 years ago came out with touch.
Well, you only need to look at UIQ to see the touch possibilities that Symbian has, and that's devices like the Sony Ericsson P800, which I think was way, way ahead of its time in many respects. Yeah. I mean, you look at it now and actually get it out, and I powered it up the other day, and I was, you know, quite startled by the fact that some of the concepts we take for granted in touchscreens were there already. And, okay, some of the UI ideas have been updated. There's a lot more kind of sliding around and a lot more animation. But that's partly reflecting capacitive touchscreens, I think, which have sort of changed the way we interact from being a sort of point-and-click touch surface to being more of a sort of a gesture surface, and that has obvious implications for the UI. But many of the things we, you know, think about were actually there, and I do wonder if UIQ was just a bit too far ahead of its time, and, you know, UIQ got to version 3, and they're actually working on the next version in terms of UIQ4 and beyond, and some of the concepts that were in that I saw early on still haven't really been introduced in mainstream touch devices. It is a what if, and in this particular case I think the responsibility lies at Nokia's door, who they basically said that touch was not going to be the thing. They were going to go with non-touch, and that was reflected, as Ewan says, in both the 7650 and the 9210. Which is somewhat ironic given that Symbian came out of Scion, which I think were one of the early pioneers of those touchscreen PDA devices. So Nokia's sort of missing market trends probably caused more trouble in the smartphone market than one might originally think.
Yeah, okay. Am I allowed to plug articles from a certain Mr. Andrew Olowski, Rafe? He's a friend of ours.
Definitely. Yeah.
even if we don't always agree with everything he writes, he's done a fascinating series of articles over on the Register looking at the history of Scion to Symbian and the different interfaces and the different different reference designs. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Do go and read there. There's about tens of thousands of words to read, and it'll give you a real insight into how all this developed. My own personal choices from those list of devices, Symbian 3 devices, 1 year on. The N8, of course, I just can't live without the camera. I can't live without all the electronics and all of the multifarious Swiss Army knife functions it does. And like Rafe, I would also pick out the E6. It's not my second favourite Symbian 3 device. It's way down the list, but it's the one that complements the N8 best. The E6 on its own, okay, there's no charging, you're in the middle of nowhere, and the battery's got to last 3 days, and you've got to have a full QWERTY keyboard to do this, that, and the other on your website. The one device to do absolutely everything, apart from maybe take macro photographs, the E6 can do everything. It's just, it's not particularly good at anything, but it will do everything, and it will last for ages, and it's in one-piece design, so there's nothing to break as well. So for that reason, the E6 also makes it onto my list. The one I put in the drawer, Probably the X7. Sorry, X7. It's style over function. It's got a lovely large screen, and for that I forgive it. And I would actually use it for a while, and I'd probably quite enjoy it. But the shaped sloped side would really, really annoy me. And also those Star Trek warp nacelle grills on the corners. I think, why aren't these doing anything? Okay, if they're not speakers, let them be jet engines that make the phone fly around the room. They've got to have some function, and they don't. They don't even let the speaker sound out, do they, Ewan?
I love the fact that you've went, you know, the one thing that I will miss on a desert island is a macro lens functionality. rather than a jet engine on your phone. If I'm stuck on a desert island, I want the jet engine first. I don't want to take pretty pictures.
Well, if I was on a desert island, I'd take some gorgeous photographs, rest assured. We are right out of time, guys. Thank you very much for participating in this All About Symbian Insight podcast. Don't forget, we also have All About WindowsPhone.com if you are heading that way, as Nokia are. And we hope you stay with us here as well and maybe straddle both podcasts for a while. We'll have plenty to talk about in 2012. It's a goodbye down in Sussex from Rafe.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And a goodbye up in hell from David.
Goodbye, everyone, while we straddle podcasts.
And a shed-weary goodbye up in Edinburgh from Ewan.
Let's not say goodbye. Let's say until the next time.
Okay. Well, very, very soon. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye for now.